It's just after 11 a.m. on the morning of the 17th of October, 1898. The Gare du Nord, Paris's main train station, is bustling with a Monday morning thrum of activity. The 11:50 train to the port of Calais, known as the boat train, is being loaded with coal to fire its journey to the coast. It will be a while still before the passengers for this train arrive at the station to begin embarking. The heaving bustle of passengers and luggage porters rises above a background of steam, whistles, and the sound of trains departing other platforms. Carriage doors slam, whistles blare, metal-tipped walking canes click and tap along the flagstones. And this busy platform is exactly what Harry, the valet, has been waiting for. He snaps his pocket watch shut and slips it back into his embroidered waistcoat, and straightening his top hat, he steps out into the crowd. If he's to blend in, hiding in plain sight as he intends to, he needs the heave of passengers to carry him along the platform and away from the watchful eyes of the Parisian police. Head high, chin up, chest out. He sets off walking with purpose, weaving through the masses, looking as though he too is simply hurrying for his train. His tailored suit and hand-made shoes give him the look of a first-class traveller. His posture and fine bearing mark him out as a gentleman. Not a single person on the platform gives him a second glance. Indeed, some, deferentially, give way to let him pass. It's exactly as he planned. Reaching the first-class carriages of the boat train, Harry tucks in behind a pillar, allowing the crowd to flow around him. He'll be fine here, out of sight enough to watch for his prey undetected, but in the perfect position to monitor his prize. He's planned this job meticulously. Every footstep, every movement, premeditated, perfectly timed, and all part of his elaborate subterfuge. He's been observing his target for a number of days now, and knows, by sight, the full complement of staff attending her. The Dowager Duchess of Sutherland, her entourage, and most importantly, her jewelry case, won't be far away now. In fact, from his position, he soon spies the Duchess's maid hurrying down the busy platform, her gloved little hands clutching the jewel case tightly. She's followed by another servant, laden down with baggage. Harry's heart quickens as the maid passes in front of him, his prize tantalizingly close. Through snatched glimpses between the flowing crowd, he watches the maid climb onto the carriage, followed by the other servant. Between the two of them, they wrestle the luggage onto the train and into the Duchess's compartment. There, they drape a blanket over the cases, hiding them from the prying eyes of any sneak thieves. Too late, Harry smiles. He just has to wait for his moment to strike now. Shortly after the cases are on board, the Dowager Duchess of Sutherland swans down the platform, stately and regal. She takes her seat in the carriage, and her two servants leave for their own third-class carriage. Harry's heart sinks. He had expected the Duchess to linger on the platform, bidding farewell to friends or simply making sure she was seen. Harry feels a small affinity with this rather scandalous noblewoman. After all, both he and the stern-looking Duchess have served time inside a prison cell. He for theft, and her for meddling in her late second husband's will to favour herself. Recent press has been rather unkind to her, and Harry had expected the woman to court a little publicity here. No such luck. She's staying firmly put in the carriage, guarding her property like a pit bull. And Harry knows that if she doesn't move, he's not going to get his hands on her precious cargo. All he can do is wait and hope she makes just the one false move he will need to pull off his coup. Fortunately, he quickly spies a window of opportunity in the voluminous shape of Henri de Blowitz, now striding along the platform. This well-fed, flashily dressed, fussy man is the Paris-based correspondent for the Times newspaper. As de Blowitz passes, he spies the Duchess already in her seat on the train. No doubt sensing a scoop, he can't help himself but tap on the window and summon her out for a quick hello. Fortunately for Harry, The Duchess understands the need to pander to the press, and she steps out of the carriage to shake de Blowitz's meaty hand. This is Harry's moment. He slips into the carriage as the Dowager Duchess steps out, and not 5 seconds later, he walks out again with a satchel slung over his shoulder. The Duchess's satchel, containing the Duchess's priceless jewels. As one of the most notorious jewel thieves of the Victorian era strides purposefully back along the platform, amongst the jostling businessmen and beleaguered porters, the triumphant smile spreading across Harry's face is about the only thing out of place in the Gare du Nord. As the boat train's whistle sounds, calling her passengers aboard, Harry, the valet, vanishes effortlessly into the crowd. He slips gracefully through the ticket gates and glides into a waiting taxi to make good his escape. I'm John Hopkins, and welcome to Scotland Yard Confidential, the show where we delve into the files of London's legendary Criminal Investigation Department. You'll be right there alongside investigators as they search for clues, interrogate suspects, and sort the truth from the lies. There will be twists and turns along the way. Sometimes the trail will run cold. Sometimes it will be a race against time. We'll rub shoulders with notorious gangsters, sit down with informants, and come face to face with cold-blooded murderers as we follow in the footsteps of some of the greatest detectives in history.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
The bold and audacious theft of nearly £25,000 worth of precious jewels, over £2 million in today's money, was perfectly executed. It happened in broad daylight, right under the victim's nose. In fact, nobody even noticed the jewels were missing until the train reached Amiens. By then, it was far too late to know when they were taken or who to blame. And French police are baffled. The theft sends shockwaves all the way back across the Channel, where Scotland Yard's detectives' ears immediately prick up. French police believe that this is clearly the work of a highly organized gang of thieves. There's no way one man could have pulled it off alone. But they don't have any obvious suspects for the heist. They're obliged to report the theft to the Yard because it's an offense in Britain to deal in goods stolen abroad. They will need to be on the lookout for the first sign of those jewels and whoever took them. As far as Scotland Yard is concerned, the fact that the victim is a British aristocrat who was due to journey back to Britain on the overnight ferry means it stands to reason that the robbers may too be British. Indeed, they already have their eyes on a number of thieves capable of putting a gang together for this kind of job. What follows is a game of cat and mouse, a tight investigation by one of the best on the force searching for the greatest jewel thief of the time. But when both cop and robber reckon they're at the top of their game, there can only be one winner. The man appointed to lead the case is Detective Inspector Walter Dew. In fact, he only got his promotion to the title of inspector just one day before the theft took place. His star is on the rise, and he's keen to prove his worth. With the fresh commission as Inspector at Scotland Yard under his belt, D.I. Walter Dew fancies himself as someone of a real-life Sherlock Holmes. He's sure he has the keen intellect and sharp insights to get to the bottom of a case like this. But where to start? On Scotland Yard's growing list of known felons, there are those who make a career of domestic larceny, never leaving home soil. And there are others, perhaps more daring and adventurous, who aren't afraid to travel abroad for the right prize. And it is in this second list that D.I. Jew begins his investigation. Working through the list of known continental thieves, Dew and his men begin looking for anyone who may have been abroad at the time of the robbery. But to find that out, they're going to have to tease that information from some notoriously reluctant informants. Starting with the usual haunts of known thieves, officers begin making their inquiries at bars, nightclubs, dives and dens up and down the city. It's slow going. Even at the best of times, the relationship between cops and robbers is tense. Answers are brief, evasive, and bristlingly defensive. Unsurprisingly, everyone they speak to has a watertight alibi for the day of the robbery, and none of them have seen any sign of the stolen jewels. At least, not that they're admitting. But curiously, there's one name they're all quick to mention. It seems one of their counterparts is suddenly flush with cash, and he's not been shy in showing it off. A chap known to all in the stolen jewel trade as Harry the Valet has been spending lavishly of late. Champagne for everyone, drinks all round. So excessive is his spending that his fellow thieves have all commented on it. They now suggest to D.I. Jew that the Valet's newfound wealth also seems to have coincided with the Gare du Nord robbery. They effectively come out and point the finger at him, proving the old adage, there's no honour among thieves. This is a great breakthrough for D.I. Dew and his men. Harry the Valet is well known to them all. In fact, in the past decade, he's been imprisoned for possession of stolen goods on 4 separate occasions. They found him fencing his ill-gotten gains several times, but they've not yet been able to catch him in the act of stealing them. He's far too cute for that. You see, a plain old common thief, Harry the Valet is not. In fact, anyone who doesn't know the man's criminal history might confuse him for a country gentleman. He's tall, handsome, debonair, and worldly. No one knows his real name, and he seems to offer a number of aliases whenever he's arrested. He is able to talk eloquently about the economy, or the best horses on the racing circuit, or bemoan the trials and tribulations of the landed gentry. As a result, he blends effortlessly into high society, often mingling with the elite at the dinners and garden parties that he invites himself to. It's only after he's left, usually with a few new trinkets and charms in hand, do other guests begin to question who that erudite and charming gentleman was. It's been a life's work for Harry the Valet, building this gentlemanly persona for himself, a world away from the grim squalor of London's East End, which he was born into. Harry is, in fact, a true Cockney, born here in the Peel of Bow Bells. The son of a frame maker, Harry watched his father work hard and struggle to make ends meet for his family. Fortunately for the boy, his father was determined that Harry would exceed him. And though a good education was beyond his means, he filled the house with books for the young man to better himself. It was in these fictional tales that Harry found the taste of the life he craved. His education came later, not in a fancy private school, but in the dubious care of a prolific fence called Abraham Mitchell. Mitchell drove the streets of London in a smart yellow-wheeled gig pulled by a fine black horse called Irish Prince. Much like the Artful Dodger fetched and carried for Fagin, so the young Harry did Mitchell's bidding. A fellow apprentice thief, commenting that Harry was always at Mitchell's side, sneered, "You're his valet. You're always with him." The name stuck, and Harry wore it with pride. His master had taught him well, and soon his natural light-fingered skill was honed to become his stock in trade. Harry quickly realized that an honest day's work would never be required of him. Instead, his profits would come from the briefest moments of sheer brilliance. Now, despite having been arrested on several occasions, his reputation among fellow thieves is lofty too. Rumors about some of his more daring exploits have turned to legend, whispered in awe at the valet's brass-necked impudence. One such story goes that he once fleeced a wealthy gambler in a Monte Carlo casino. They passed pleasantries, shared a cocktail, and wagered on the spin of the roulette wheel. Little did that rich man know that his new friend was actually gambling with his money, having lifted £1,500 from his coat pocket. D.I. Dew knows that Harry the valet has built his entire career on his ability to rub shoulders with the rich and famous, which is where he finds his targets. He's a master thief with unrivaled sleight of hand and an ethical code which says he will only steal from those he knows can afford the loss. The problem is, money burns holes in Harry's pockets. Having been brought up with just enough to get by, and feeling that he always deserved better, he just can't help himself. He spends the proceeds of his heists almost as quickly as he completes them. His lavish, decadent lifestyle means that not only does he need to keep stealing to maintain the pretense, but he's not exactly circumspect or subtle about his exploits. A master thief he may well be, but a prudent man he is not. D.I. Dew has little doubt that Harry the valet has both the skill and subterfuge to have pulled off the theft from the Dowager Duchess. And if the other ne'er-do-wells Dew has spoken to are to be believed, he is now up to his old habit of burning through the proceeds in champagne and caviar. With a growing sense of urgency, D.I. Dew knows he has to recover the stolen jewels before they're all broken up, sold on, and lost for good. But that presents him with his next problem. Where to find a man who makes a living being undetectable? What Detective Dew doesn't know yet is that Harry's had a significant change in his life recently. A change that may well be his downfall.
Hi listeners, John Hopkins here. We hope you enjoy this trailer for Noise's new show, Detectives Don't Sleep. Listen wherever you get your podcasts, with new episodes airing every Tuesday.
What makes a great detective? If you arrived at a crime scene, would you have what it takes to crack the case wide open? Would you spot the vital clue that everyone else has missed? Could you unravel the suspect's perfect alibi? And could you confront a murderer? Introducing Detectives Don't Sleep, the new whodunit podcast from Noiser. Each week, we'll take you beyond the police tape to shadow the real detectives who worked history's most intriguing cases. You'll be right there, solving a murder on the beaches of the Bahamas, busting neo-Nazi art dealers in the back streets of Europe, and unmasking con men in Beverly Hills. These detectives, they all have one thing in common. They can never truly rest until they've closed the case. Listen to Detectives Don't Sleep wherever you get your podcasts.
As expected, no one seems to know where Harry is. Or if they do, they're not about to give him up. It's one thing to point the finger of suspicion in a man's general direction, but no one wants to be known as a grass. So now, obviously having heard that he's under suspicion, Harry seems to have gone to ground. This is particularly vexing for Detective Inspector Dew, as he knows just how quickly the valet is capable of spending even such a vast fortune. They revisit every one of the bars and clubs where Harry has been seen splashing his cash over the past week or so, leaving officers at each to watch for his return. They also trawl the streets around previous known addresses, looking for any sign of him, all to no avail. Has Harry the valet finally learned to keep his head down, just when D.I. Dew desperately needs him to show his face? The weeks crawl past with still no sign of the valet in any of his usual haunts. Then, in early November, just when D.I. Dew has begun to give up hope of finding Harry in time to recover any of the Duchess's treasure, he gets a very unexpected visit. Miss Maud Richardson, an actress, or rather a chorus girl in the West End, has a very interesting confession to make. Sitting across the table from D.I. Dew, she admits that she knows all about the theft of the Dowager Duchess's jewel case. First, she tells them what they already know. The culprit was none other than Harry the valet. And then, she tells them what they didn't know. That he stole the jewels for love. He stole them for her. D.I. Dew's heart skips a beat. Is this striking young woman saying that Harry gave the jewels to her? Does she still have the gems? What a relief that would be. But as she continues her tale, Jew realizes that he's not going to be that lucky. She explains that she and Harry have been friendly. She says that she was in Paris at the time of the robbery and that he frequently visited her apartment there. He'd always presented himself to her as a gentleman of means, though he hadn't ever revealed much of his past life. He'd certainly had no problem funding trips to follow her through Europe and Britain as her theatre company went on tour. In fact, she'd begun to suspect quite early on that he was in love with her. But she tells D.I. Dew that she had also begun to question where his money was coming from. At times, he would be flush, and at others, penniless. On one occasion, he even asked her for a small loan, which she outright refused to give him. She felt that the request had soured their relationship somewhat. After all, what kind of gentleman asks a lady for money? So when one night last month, he turned up at her Paris apartment with a selection of the most magnificent jewels she had ever seen, she was taken aback. She didn't know where they'd come from, but they were clearly incredibly valuable, even to her untrained eye. Despite his bluster, she was sure these precious stones were not the kind of gift Harry could afford to give. And yet, she says, they were so beautiful she could hardly turn them down. For a minute or two, she seriously considered her future with this mysterious admirer and the treasures he could offer her. But her fantasy was soon dashed. As it turned out, the jewels weren't intended as a gift for her after all. Harry had only brought them by to show them off. His intention was to prove to her that he was a man of means, no ordinary millionaire. A man who could take care of her every need. Putting aside her doubts, she says, she couldn't help being drawn in by the array of sparkling gems laid before her. Even though he'd told her they were not hers to keep, she claims she pleaded with Harry to borrow the jewels, just to wear them for one night. Amazingly, he acquiesced. But the next day, when he came to collect the treasure, she begged him to let her keep them a little longer. An argument ensued. There was a terrible scene, which ended with Harry taking the jewels from me by force and leaving the apartment in a rage, she says. Then she admits that she was so angry with the way he'd behaved that she marched straight to the Paris police and told them everything she knew. Well, this knocks D.I. Dew for six. The French police had known about Harry the valet being the thief all this time and had done nothing about it. Why? Maud claims she made her statement to the officers in Paris on the morning after the robbery, so there could be no doubt, surely, that the jewels belonged to the Duchess of Sutherland. Why hadn't they followed up on her claim, or even mentioned it to their Scotland Yard counterparts? If they'd acted quickly enough, with Maud's help, they could have caught Harry before he even slipped away back to London. Maud admits that she might have been a little hysterical when she made her statement. Perhaps they didn't take her seriously, or perhaps they simply couldn't understand her. Either way, to D.I. Dew's relief, she's here now, and if they ever do catch the valet, her evidence may just allow them to press charges for the outrageous theft. The hunt for Harry the valet now kicks up another gear. Sadly, despite her detailed confession, Maud says she has not seen Harry since their return to London. Turning his attention back to the jewel thief's known haunts, D.I. Dew realizes that Maud is not alone. It seems no one has seen or heard from Harry for at least 2 weeks now. Dew's best hope is Maud. If all she says is true, and Harry does love her the way she thinks, surely he'll try to get in touch again soon. Dew assigns officers to watch her home and the theatre where she works. All they can do is hope he resurfaces. But as the days pass, these officers realize that Maud is already regretting her decision to speak to the police. She becomes increasingly elusive, and D.I. Dew begins to suspect that even if Harry does make contact with her again, she's more likely to tell him they're onto him than she is to tell the police where he's hiding. It appears that Harry's love is not fully unrequited. Following the jewels instead may prove more useful. a substantial reward has already been offered by the Duchess herself for the safe return of her property. Now, while Harry the valet is well respected for his skill as a thief, he doesn't seem to have many close friends, and everyone has their price. D.I. Dew just needs one person to spill the beans, so he leans on the Duchess's reward money as the persuasion he needs. Along with news of the hefty bounty, he posts a description of the valet all over town. Now all he has to do is sit back and wait. On the 27th of November, 1898, his patience is finally rewarded. A man arrives at the station with information that a person fitting the description of the suspect is currently living in an apartment house in Cathcart Street in the rather affluent area of South Kensington. Gathering his men at the yard, D.I. Dew decides that the best course of action will be to raid the property quickly before the valet can move on again. Hopefully they can catch their thief by surprise. It's agreed by all that they'll strike the following morning. At 5 a.m. on the 28th of November, D.I. Dew and a battalion of plainclothes policemen, supported by other uniformed officers, gathers around the corner from the large townhouse in Cathcart Street. The property has been divided into luxurious apartments, and Harry, apparently, is on the first floor. The dense fog of London shields them like a cloak, but still they hide out of sight, biding their time until the moment is right. A coal porter on his morning rounds clatters by, the heavy clop of his horse's hooves like distant gunshots in the morning silence. The waiting officers are nervous and excitable, keen to get on with the raid, which for some will be their first. To be one of the men to catch the valet and recover the Duchess's gems will be a triumph. D.I. Dew, too, is nervous. While Harry the valet presents himself as the epitome of gentlemanliness, D.I. Dew knows him to also be a desperate character, no stranger to violence. Unsure what he'd be capable of when pushed into a tight corner, one of the other inspectors has brought along a revolver. They're determined not to make any mistakes this morning. With everyone assembled, D.I. Dew dispatches his troops to cover every possible exit from the apartment house. He and his armed colleagues will be going in through the front door with one other officer at their sides. It's time to strike. With a final, deep breath, D.I. Dew gives the signal and the net begins to close. He's been given a set of keys to the main communicating door to the property, and they're able to slip in quietly. Without disturbing anyone in the house, they sneak upstairs towards the door of the apartment they believe Harry to be living in. The front room on the first floor is their target. Clustered together outside the door, fearing that every creak of the floorboards will give them away, the three men from Scotland Yard steel themselves to burst in. D.I. Dew reaches out a cautious hand, closing it around the doorknob. With a careful twist, he realizes that it's unlocked. The door swings open, and the three officers rush in, yelling, "Police, show yourself!" They play their flashlights over the bed, expecting to find a surprised thief lying there, but the bed is empty. Instead, they find him standing with his back to the fireplace, fully dressed in one of his fine suits, with a sardonic smile splayed across his lips. Harry the valet has been caught again. "That's him, all right," says the officer with D.I. Dew, his revolver ready for the fight they're expecting. But he doesn't come. The valet doesn't even move as Dew's colleague informs him that he's being arrested on suspicion of theft. Maybe he realizes that resistance is futile. All he says is, "It's all right, Inspector. I shall give no trouble." The manacles are slapped onto his wrists. D.I. Dew finds himself somewhat in awe of the man's composure. He doesn't seem at all bothered that the police have just burst through his door, or that, if they pin the Paris theft on him, he'll be facing a long stretch at Her Majesty's pleasure. His smile remains fixed in place as the officers search him and his apartment for signs of the stolen jewels. D.I. Dew doesn't find anything of note on Harry until he comes to the waistcoat pockets. There, he plucks out, one after the other, three beautiful diamonds, which sparkle in the light of the gas lamp the younger officer has just lit. There's little doubt that these are part of the Paris Hall, and they're absolutely magnificent. Even when Jew finds the stones, Harry doesn't seem concerned. At least, not for himself. Instead, he suddenly asks after Maud Richardson, the woman whose statement brought them to this place. Is she well? Have they seen her recently? His questions go unanswered by the stony-faced officers. A search of his room revealed more jewels and the sum of £320 in cash. These, together with the subdued prisoner, are all taken back to Scotland Yard. That Harry the valet has handled the stolen goods is clear, but thanks to Maud Richardson's evidence, D.I.D.U. knows he will finally be able to charge him with the theft as well. This, he hopes, will be one of the defining moments of his career. The passion that has landed Harry the valet in deep water shows no sign of abating, even though the lovelorn thief knows it is his beautiful Maud who betrayed him. And it seems to D.I.D.U. and his team that having done so, Maud has realized just how much she felt for the valet too. While waiting for the trial date, she begins to prove something of a nuisance to D.I.D.U. and his team. She keeps sending telegrams offering new information. But when officers go to interview her, they realize that she has nothing new to tell. She is simply desperate to remain involved with Harry's case. By the time the pre-trial hearing comes around, just a few days after his arrest, Maud, the chief witness for the prosecution, is very reluctant to take the stand. She gives her evidence in a tight voice, racked with guilt for betraying Harry in the first place. And in the days leading up to his trial, Harry keeps pleading with D.I.D.U. to be allowed to see Maud, despite the fact that it is her evidence which will send him to jail. And she, it seems, is just as anxious to see him. He's already confessed to D.I.D.U. in various interviews that he was so in love with Maud and so desperate to prove to her that he was the gentleman he'd claimed, that he did the job to make sure they had the money to marry and live a happy, wealthy life together. And he may well have got away with it too, if he'd just let her hold on to some of the jewels. The trial begins on the 29th of November, 1898. Harry the valet, who has presented his real name on this occasion as William Johnson, age 46, is charged with the theft of between £25,000 and £30,000 worth of jewels belonging to the Dowager Duchess of Sutherland. The valet saves everyone a lot of time and trouble by pleading guilty to the charge, and the trial is short-lived. Sentencing is suspended, though. The judge offers Harry the chance to reveal where is hidden the vast haul of gems yet to be recovered. Harry, of course, refuses. D.I.D.U. visits him while he's on remand to try to get him to change his mind, but he remains firm. Maud's evidence may have condemned him to a longer sentence than what he might get for possession, but he could still reduce it by telling them where the remainder of the jewels are. But Harry is not to be dissuaded. He sees the sentence as a mere hiccup in his grand plan to marry Maud. Instead of confessing where the gems are hidden, he doubles down on his attempts to communicate with his love. He begs D.I.D.U. to tell her to wait for him, that he will call her as soon as he's out. Tell her, he says, that I will divide my last penny with her. On the 18th of January, 1899, when Harry is finally brought back into court for the sentence to be passed, D.I.D.U. finds himself standing quite close to the dock. At one point, Harry leans over and whispers to him, "Tell the court I wish the money found on me to be handed to the Duchess." Well, that's hardly a generous offer. The sum of money found in his pockets only amounted to £320, not quite the £25,000 or so that he stole, but better than nothing. The judge sentences him to 7 years penal servitude and orders that the £320 and what jewellery has been recovered be returned to the Duchess. There's little doubt that Harry the valet would have gone down in history as one of the most successful jewel thieves of the Victorian age, if only he hadn't fallen so hopelessly in love with the glamorous chorus girl, Maud Richardson. By his own admission, years after his release, he admitted, "I acted like a fool." When Harry the Valet walked free from prison in 1905, his sentence served. He found London a changed place. The old queen had died. The new king had taken the throne. Cars had replaced horse-drawn gigs. And the high society into which he had striven to blend had modernized its attitudes and fashions so as to render his disguises obsolete. Harry the Valet found himself almost penniless on his release, and there was no hidden stash of jewels to sell either. The sad truth is that in his desperation to heal the rift between he and Maud, Harry had rushed back to London and pawned most of the jewels at well below their market value to a fence called Grizzard. Knowing that he had the notorious valet over a barrel if he gave him up, Grizzard offered a fraction of the price for the gems. Desperate to have enough money to show Maud he could care for her, Harry accepted the trade. But when Maud wouldn't see him again, he set about showing off just how rich he was in the hopes of tempting her back to him. By the time of his arrest, that £320 and the few jewels recovered were all that remained of the great Gare du Nord heist. And as for Maud, her love didn't last the seven-year stretch. In her case, absence would make the heart grow harder. Her association with Harry the Valet had brought her nothing but bad press. She wanted no more to do with him. From the lonely quiet of his cell, Harry had been forced to accept his folly in falling for her. In truth, they were too alike, too headstrong, too flighty, too restless to ever find true love in each other. What little love they had proved too frail to live up to the other's expectations, and no amount of stolen jewels would change that. Of course, Harry might have done better too had he not been up against D.I. Dew and the detectives of Scotland Yard. Catching the notorious Harry the Valet for the theft of the Dowager Duchess's jewels in Paris was just the beginning of D.I. Dew's formidable career as an elite detective. He would go on to be known as the man who caught wife murderer Dr. Hawley Harvey Crippen, among other high-profile collars. As for the haul of gems, of the £25,000 worth stolen, only £5,000 were ever recovered. The rest had long since been sold for far less than their value in the vain hope of buying a woman's love. Next time on Scotland Yard Confidential, it's the first year of the new millennium and a highly professional gang of armed robbers are poised to perform their most ambitious job yet and what threatens to be the crime of the century. Having already attempted two daring heists earlier in 2000, these thieves have now hatched an even more audacious plan. They mean to swipe the priceless De Beers diamond collection from the Millennium Dome in Greenwich, and they plan to do it in broad daylight. Their plan reads like a Hollywood script. High-octane mayhem involving speedboats, explosives, and armored vehicles. It may prove to be the biggest, boldest heist in British history. That is, if Scotland Yard's flying squad don't get them first. Scotland Yard Confidential is a Spotify original from Parcast, produced in partnership with Noiser. Executive produced by Max Cutler, Drew Cole, and Pascal Hughes. Developed by Julian Boiro for Parcast. Series produced by Addison Nugent. Series consultant Roger Morris. Hosted by me, John Hopkins. Written by Sean Coleman. Supervising editor Kevin Pham. Sound design by Jacob Booth. Sound supervisor Tom Pink. Edited by Carla Flores and Rob Plummer. Mixmaster by Jacob Booth. Music by Oliver Baines and Dory McCall.